What's good, everyone, and welcome to the Playconomics Podcast, episode 124, where we break down the business behind our favorite video games and your favorite video games and provide you with financial context for industry trends. I'm one of your hosts, Matt Mascari, and joined with me today is no one because Bobby is currently doing some GTA 6 research in Florida. This is about to be a wild episode. We have a few new segments that we've been waiting to try out in this new year, and you are not going to want to miss it. So before this show starts, like this video, subscribe, and hit that notification bell so that you never miss a single second of Playconomics goodness. And remember, let us know your thoughts in the comments below. And now let's get into it. First segment on today's episode of the Playconomics Podcast, as always, a fan favorite. What Playconomics does better than any single podcast, news channel, or anything video game related on the planet is we break down the business. In this segment, breaking down the business, we are talking about one thing and one thing only. Grimmest scenario for the video game industry. What we are seeing today is similar to the greater tech industry as a whole. Massive layoffs coming from the video game industry. We're starting off with Unity. 1,800 people, roughly 25% of their total workforce, and six times the layoffs from just last year. So last year they laid off a certain amount of people, six times that this year. It is an incredible amount of layoffs for this company. And a lot of what Unity is facing now is because of the extreme backlash that they were going with for one of their policies that they announced early in the year, where they were going to change the way they were monetizing their platform for game development. It wasn't a huge deal, the changes, and we've kind of walked back on how serious those changes were. They were a little more industry standard. The way they went about it, the kind of underhandedness of it, the sudden switch, as well as their complete fumble of the bag for any PR relations coming out of that, was just a huge reason that a lot of things at Unity really, really took a hit. They took a massive stock hit when that happened. And because of that, they really had to kind of do like a reorg restructure. And if you work at any company in any industry, reorg restructure most likely means layoff. There's a massive reduction in their workforce, really focusing in on what they can do at Unity to try to make it as great of a company as possible. We completely understand that mentality and that take. We just feel for all the people that got laid off at Unity recently. Followed up by Embracer Group. Over the past year, roughly 1,000 of their 15,000 person workforce got laid off. Major studios affected were Lost Boys Interactive and Gearbox. Lost Boys, famously for the Tiny Tina's Adventure series that recently been coming out. And right before that, it was Borderlands, same series. So sad to see them go. It's really, really a... we're seeing them dwindle down to the leanest teams possible for some of these games. And it's just really hard in today's gaming market to work and do anything with that amount of people. Games are very expensive to make. They're very high effort. Leaning down the teams is very difficult. But when you expand the way that Embracer Group is specifically after all of their acquisitions, and we'll get into that more later as we talk about a couple of these additional people that suffered layoffs, it's really, really difficult to expand rapidly without a lot in the books and a lot of good in the books. So it's very difficult once those long projects stop coming to fruition and you have those long projects and you're waiting to see how they'll come and they don't necessarily do as well as you can, you can't afford to keep that studio running anymore because you didn't get the return on their 5 to 15 year project that they were working on. Next up, we got Playtika, which removed about 10% of their staff, 400 employees in a sense of redundancy. September 30th of 2023, they actually acquired InPlay Labs for about $80 million. So seeing this reduction in staff is kind of understandable. Again, rapid expansion, and it's something that we can kind of sum up here, is you're going to notice Unity, Embracer Group, Playtika, a lot of these companies that are doing these massive layoffs – they're companies that try to rapidly expand, and they're following the Microsoft playbook. And I'll never admit this while Bobby is actually on the podcast, but the Microsoft playbook is not sustainable for almost any company outside of Microsoft itself. The amount of time and effort that you have to put into a merger or an acquisition, and then compounded with the lead time and development struggles of a normal video game and the absolute immense cost that that game takes to put from the developers to your console, to your PC, it's so insurmountable that if you handle any of these acquisitions or any of these game developments incorrectly for these smaller studios and for these smaller studios that are trying to grab, like land grab as many things as you possibly can, if you miss, it ends in 10%. 20%, 25% of your workforce just getting canned, because now all of a sudden you have redundancies and you go back to what you were doing before the acquisition anyway. It's a very, very difficult process to go through a merger acquisition while continuing to ship out products. It delays everything for the company that's getting acquired. It delays things for the company that's internally bringing that company in. It's just such a minefield. And in a very time-consuming and long development process industry like video games, it's just such a high risk unless you have the type of money and you have the type of backing. And honestly, you have the type of know-how that a company like Microsoft does. They've done this billions of times in the tech industry. They understand, they're big enough that they know how to go through a merger and acquisition while continuing to pump out product. And even they aren't that good at it. The last 5 years, they've been going through mergers and acquisitions over and over and over again. And they haven't put out a lot of content until 2023, 2024. Hopefully, we're going to see even more of that content. We got games like Hellblade, and we'll talk about that much later in the episode. But it's very, very difficult for a lot of these companies to do all of this merger, acquisition, and bringing all of these external teams in and still crank out product at a clip. And we're seeing that in the massive layoffs. And then we go to two video game adjacent companies, not necessarily developers or publishers, but we're looking at Twitch and Discord. So Twitch lays off about 35% of their staff between early 2023 and now. They're outsourcing almost all of their customer service. And these reductions claimed by Twitch is to allow them to be sustainable and viable long term. Two major things that I take out of this. One, layoffs are never good. You never want to be in a spot where your team is ambitiously trying to take on new products, projects, and because of that, all of these people have to go, and you have to go back and refocus on what was actually your bread and butter and what was actually working. That's what we're seeing at Twitch now, is that they're making these teams really, really lean. And the verbiage that they used is sustainable and viable long term, which makes me very, very, very concerned for the health of Twitch. I never want to hear sustainable. I don't want this to sound like Twitch is just a service we provide. It's something we purchased. It's something that we do at, and I'm talking as the greater Amazon, because we all know that Twitch is owned by Amazon. I don't want Twitch to come or to become such a just baked in product. It's just a mail at home product. It's something where it's there. It was the leader of the industry at one time. It has such a market share that it's going to be very, very difficult for anything to get into that space. And it's going to take a couple of years for them to get there anyway. We're looking at a 5 to 10 year race where somebody's going to, before somebody could even feasibly replace Twitch as the main place to experience video game streamers, YouTube has a really, really good foot in the race right now. But if I went and talked to pretty much anyone and asked them, where do you want to stream your content? Not somebody that's already streaming, not somebody that has a well-developed YouTube channel or well-developed any type of media, somebody that wants to start day one today, what platform are you going to try to grow your community on? number one answer is going to be Twitch. If I ask somebody, hey, where do you watch this person's content? Where do you watch your favorite gamer stream their content? They're going to say Twitch. And they have such a high market share that when I hear terms like sustainable and viable long term, I hear mailing it in. I hear we laid off a bunch of staff. We've been laying off people for almost 2 years now. We're just trying to keep this ship afloat. We're not trying to make any sweeping improvements. We're not trying to make it better for the streamers, for the consumers. We're not adding searchability. We're not planning on competing with Microsoft. We're not going to compete with Kick. It's just where Twitch. We know that we got so much good faith. We know that we have so many people interacting with our platform. We know that we're top dog. We're mailing it in from now on, until the market is so saturated with different streaming platforms, or it's so saturated with large major companies and Netflix, just anyone that's looking to get into this space. Netflix, YouTube's already there. Any type of the big tech media places, Facebook gets into streaming again. They're waiting for that to happen and just kind of be one of the brands. And it's sad because Twitch could be so good, and it was so good. It was the premier way to experience streaming, and they've just done nothing with it since. And it's very, very sad to see Amazon mismanage Twitch for so long and still have kind of a middling outlook on it. Sustainable, viable, long-term, not one I want to hear when I'm talking about one of my favorite video game adjacent franchises. Then we get into Discord, something that we love here on Playconomics. Shout out if you haven't joined the Discord already. Links below. Get on the Discord, join the Playconomics. Discord laid off about 17% of our staff, and it gave a very feasible explanation, and one that we've seen in tech industries, we've seen in a lot of industries that were affected by COVID spending. Tech was by far one of the biggest, if not the biggest. Their staff grew too quickly. They took on too many projects, and they need to get back to their main projects and focus in. Like I said before with Embracer Group and Playtika, it's unfortunate to see that, just because I can only imagine like where would Discord be if these items were profitable and if they had been properly vetted and they weren't just rapid expansion projects and they weren't like, let's get into this. These sales numbers are always going to be where they're supposed to be. It wasn't. And COVID spending obviously inflated a lot of industries, tech, video games, 100% victims of that. We're seeing it with Discord now, where they hired too many people. They need to lay off some people to get things back their ducks back in a row, and then just boom, let's get back to making Discord great. And then let's slowly do that increase over time. All employees from Discord that were laid off and impacted by this, only company that I saw recently announce what their plan was that all employees get 5 months pay and 5 months of benefits, which, depending on the company you work for, is extremely generous. A lot of people just get laid off. They get a month package. They get 2 months package. It's good to at least see that they're taking care of their employees for the next 5 months, which it is always welcome to see people being able to maintain their lifestyle and not absolutely get their life uprooted because of some poor decisions that Discord made planning and projecting into the future. But that is part of a larger topic that I wanted to kind of quickly discuss before we get into some other topics here on Playconomics, is that the gaming industry hit a boom with COVID, like many other industries did. But what we're seeing now and what we're starting to see with a lot of different industries that were affected by COVID is that you had this, they were trajecting up, they were going nice straight line, nice little slant going up, and then boom, COVID spike. And now what we're seeing a couple years later, things are going back to normal and you got the COVID crash. But what people aren't talking about is they're talking about the big boom and the big crash as this is the end of video games or this is the enlightenment of video games. It's one or the other. But what people aren't talking about is that after the crash, Crash happened. Tech hurt. It's video game industry hurt. It's starting to regress back towards the mean. And what that means is that, yes, there was a massive boom and there was a massive bust. But that line, that trajectory that the game industry was going on, that very constant state, solid slate line going straight across up at a very consistent overtime metric, it's going to regress to that. It's going to start coming. The bust happened. It had to correct for the big boom that we had during COVID. And then it's going to slowly get back to that mean. And we're going to see that trajectory correct itself, where the boom is considered, the bust is considered. But when all things said and done, if you look at this over a 10 to 20 year period, it's going to be a nice smooth line for the gaming industry, just like it always has been. And I think that's a big piece of where I get my consumer faith in the video game industry, is that, yes, there was a clear bust and there was a clear external factors that both inflated and then deflated the video game industry. But what we're looking at now is it coming back to that gradual growth, where I think we're going to get a lot less of these layoffs in the future, because I think as of right now, a lot of these companies have corrected. They've done their layoffs. They've cut their workforce. They're focusing on what's important. They're focusing what they were supposed to be for the last 3 years, instead of thinking rapid expansion and rapid growth. That's at this point is very clearly should have 2020 hindsight was unsustainable. There was no way that the COVID boom was just going to continue into perpetuity. There was eventually going to be a come down from that high. And what we're seeing now is massive layoffs. But the game industry might look flawed now, but it is on the come up and it will equal itself out, and we will see that nice little progression line moving forward. But what I want to transition to now is a new segment on Playconomics called, and very, very hilariously named by yours truly, X Gonna Give It To You. And if I could play the DMX song over this without getting immediately copyright striked, I could. But in this segment, X Gonna Give It To You, we're looking at, and let me give you some background on this segment. Basically, what we're doing is we're getting the most hotly debated topics that we could find on Twitter/X. I still like calling it Twitter. Let us know in the comments below. Do you call it Twitter or do you X? And also, if you do X, if you say you're going to log on to X, then what? Do you, on Twitter, you tweet. Do you still tweet on X? These are answers that keep me up at night. If you call it X, let me know. Do you still tweet? But what we do is we get the most hotly debated tweet that we can find regarding video game content, and we put it up here for you, and we discuss. See, is there merit to this discussion, or is this just a bunch of fanboyism, or is this just a bunch of hot take news? And what we got today is a tweet by Rhino the Bouncer, which, fantastic name, verified, paid verification. Rhino, you're doing well. But basically what we have here, and you can see the image that we put up on the screen, is how do you prefer to access your game? Do you prefer full purchase, or do you prefer the subscription model? And you can see here, full purchase is obviously associated with Marvel Spider-Man, which is clearly associated with Sony, and then subscription, Starfield, clearly associated with Xbox. So I don't think there's a better way to experience video games. And I think it depends on what type of video games that you are talking about. Are you talking about a big budget, the game you need to have? Are you talking about a Halo? Are you talking about a Starfield? Are you talking about a God of War? Are you talking about any type of major first party game? Then I think we all know, and again, these are things I would never admit with Bobby on the podcast, we all know that we want to see full purchase for games like that, because we want to physically own it. We want that game in perpetuity. We never want it to leave a subscription service and not allow us to play it. We never want to see it. We also want to see the sales numbers. Let's be honest. we want to know how good that game did. And a lot of what Xbox has been doing has been masking their sales numbers, because obviously Game Pass is their metric now, and they care about their subscription more than they care about game sales. Obviously, I would say the two go hand in hand, where the subscriptions directly correlate to what the game sales would have done. And I think they should release, in some sense, spikes of their subscription service based on what they are, the major releases that they have, to see if there is a bump from that game, so that we can kind of throw a metric to, did people utilize this game? Hours played would also be a really, really good metric for something like Starfield. Just to say that, like, this game was a success on Xbox metric, because at this point, I really don't know how they would consider any game a success. Like, we don't have any metric, and recently they really haven't done like a 10 out of 10 game that has gone on Game Pass. So it's hard for us to kind of gauge the success of their like blockbuster hits when we can't really see any concrete metrics. So that's why for big first party, but big budget games, I really want to see the full purchase. And I want to see that $200 to $500 million that you spent on developing that video game. I want to be able to quickly do the math with your sales numbers and say, this game was worth it. This game was worth you making. And the consumer said that, the customer said that, not just Steam downloads and sub numbers. For all other games, for 95% of the games out there, the Maddens, the Call of Duties, the indie games, all of the games that are not worth the $70, not worth the $60. And again, Bobby, I could hear him from Florida saying, told you, good games don't go on Game Pass. And I would disagree. I don't think bad games go on Game Pass. I just think that there needs to be a sustainable way for games that take a long time to develop, a lot of effort to develop, to get into people's hands at something lower than $70. And I think we live in a world where, yes, $70 games seem expensive, $60 games seem expensive. But how many games can recoup that cost charging you $30? And I don't think it means that it's a bad game just because it can't recoup its cost. There are games that will just be more successful because of the type of game that they are, that it's impossible to just quantify based on sales numbers. For example, I can't even think of the name of the game anymore because it's such an obscure Game Pass victory. Pentiment. I got it. I figured it out. Games like Pentiment are really, really, really good. It doesn't deserve $70. It's not a $70 game. I had a lot of fun playing it. It was a little slow for me, so I haven't gotten around to finishing it just yet. And it was very, like, think heavy. So when I do play it, I need to, like, get myself into a headspace so that I could remember what I was doing and where I was and what I gotta, like, read through the notes that you're taking in the game to see what had happened and how things played out and what you responded to this. Very, very, not convoluted, but very, very complex game that I really, really enjoyed playing. I would never have paid $70 for that game. And something like Game Pass lets you experience the most games possible. So, as a cop-out to Rhino the Bouncer's question, is they're both good. They're both have high value in the gaming industry. It's just, I think full purchases clearly should be set alone for the first party games. First party, very expensive, big budget, blockbuster hits. Subscription should be for everything else. Hi-Fi Rush, send it to a subscription. Starfield, should have paid $70 for it. And that's all I could really say about that debate. And listen, I'm somebody that loves Game Pass. I'm somebody that loves my Xbox. I completely understand that a big selling point of Game Pass is those day and date sales, is that you get it day one included. And I don't think Xbox or Game Pass would be as successful without those major titles in. I think you wait 6 months, you wait a year, and then toss it on there. It'd still be a really, really good service. But I'd like to see them as you pay the $70, you release the sales numbers, you flex on the competition a little bit and say, look how good my game did. So that's where I want to wrap it up here. But what I really want to know is, how do you feel about it? Do you want full purchases for games? Do you want subscription service for games? Or do you think there's some happy medium between first party games and indie games, smaller games, things that are not a Spider-Man, a Starfield, a God of War, a Halo, something like Pentiment, Hi-Fi Rush, things like that. In our next segment is another new segment to the Playconomics channel, and it's Esports Will Save Playconomics, aka Touch Grass, where me and Bobby, mostly me, scour the internet for the best esports / competitive video game clip that we can find. We show it to you, and then we explain to you one cold hard fact about that person. So what I'm going to do now is share my screen. My screen is now sharing. We're going to watch this clip together and let me know what you think of it. Boom. Elimination one. Boom. Elimination two. Boom. Elimination three. This guy, PWR, is absolutely, absolutely cracked. And the only thing I can say to this is, PWR, I'm curious when the last time you touched grass was. Because those clips, those headshots, those eliminations were so good that I think you need to spend some time outside. You need to touch some non-pixelated grass, my friend. PWR, go touch some grass. Now it's time for our last segment, favorite among the Playconomists, is our Discord question of the week, where we get financial context for industry trends from you. If you are not already in the Discord, the link is below. I highly, highly recommend that you sign up for it. And with that being said, this week's Discord question of the week: who wins the console war in 2024? And this is a hotly, hotly debated topic within the Playconomists when Bobby is in the chat. However, he was not in the chat this week because, again, he's doing research on GTA 6. And I 100% agree with the Playconomists. We got the CPA. We got Thick Grape. We got the Actuary. We got all of the above saying that they think Xbox is going to murder the console war this year. The Switch is winding down. They're prepping for the Switch 2 that may or may not release at the end of this year. Sony has literally nothing, not a single thing currently planned for 2024 release that has any merit. There's Cotton Cord or whatever. There's Helldivers 2. Nothing big. Nothing that makes me want to play my PlayStation. That's the concern. And then you got the Final Fantasy Rebirth or whatever. I'm sure, again, not first party. Square Enix isn't first party. You don't own it. Take a play out of Microsoft's book. Just buy it. Just buy the damn thing, and I'll stop saying that you don't have any exclusives because you have them. Final Fantasy ships something every goddamn year. But what we have from Xbox, and why I really think 2024 is going to be the year of the Xbox Series X. Maybe not sales numbers, because we don't release those. We put everything on Game Pass immediately, as we discussed in the last segment, which is very, very difficult for me to make a case that Xbox is better, because there is literally no metrics that I could provide you, because the company does not provide any of those metrics. The only thing I could do is console sales numbers, and Xbox is getting absolutely clapped up. If you haven't checked out last week's video, we talk about how PlayStation absolutely murdered Xbox last year, and they outsold them 3-1. But that's last year. This is this year, 2024, baby. And Xbox has a nice, nice lineup of some first-party games that are going to be absolutely fantastic. First and foremost, we got 33 Immortals, going to be a fantastic game that you can play with 32 other people. Ark 2, it's Ark 2. You know what you're going to get. It's going to be fantastic. And it's going to be an Xbox exclusive, baby. Then we're going to get Avowed, which is outside of Hellblade and Rise of Ronin. Avowed is my most anticipated game of the year outside of those two heavy hitters. And then, of course, you got Hellblade 2. We don't know when it's coming, but we know it's coming in 2024. And I am so excited. It is going to win Game of the Year. And it is going to put Xbox on the goddamn map. And I cannot wait for Hellblade 2. Then we're going to get Star Wars Outlaws and Tower Born, just to name a few things. Xbox is going to absolutely destroy 2024. And oh yeah, they also got some things coming to the Xbox for the first time and breaking down some barriers of previously exclusive content coming to the Xbox. Used to be for other consoles, now it's coming to Xbox because they understand the value of Game Pass. We've seen Octopath Traveler 2, which is an absolute Game Pass darling, and continuing to foster that strength between the Switch and Xbox. I'm just saying, we're seeing Hi-Fi Rush go to the Switch. We're seeing Octopath Traveler 2 go to the Xbox. I don't know. Maybe sometime we get Game Pass on the Switch. Who knows? And then we get a very interesting one, and one that is causing me a lot of internal strife. Final Fantasy 14 Online is coming to the Xbox. And if you're a longtime fan of the show, you know that I want nothing more than World of Warcraft on console. Final Fantasy 14 Online is really close to me getting World of Warcraft on console. I love the Final Fantasy universe. I love the gameplay of most of their games. And I've seen a lot of Final Fantasy 14 content, and they're saying it's very story driven. It's got a lot of story content out there from every expansion. Before you even get to any game end game content, it's looking good. Will Final Fantasy 14 be the game that takes me away from World of Warcraft? I don't know, and honestly, I don't think so, because World of Warcraft is playing real good in Dragonflight, and I am very excited for The War Within to cap off this 20-year story. So, overall, I do agree with the Playconomists. Xbox is the champion for 2024 this year. I guarantee it. You heard it here first. On December 31st of next year, you're going to see Bobby crying. You're going to see me holding a trophy. And I cannot wait. Xbox has needed this for so long. And with that being said, that was the Discord question of the week. If you want to see, if you want to answer next week's Discord question, see the pinned comment for what that question is. Join the Discord now. Link is below. And while you're at it, like this video, subscribe, and hit that notification bell so that you never miss a single moment of Playconomics Financial Context for Industry Trends. And if you interact with Playconomics here, remember to follow us on X/Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads. We are in there if you want some daily Playconomics content. But most importantly, and as always, happy games.